Hey, it's Cindy, and you're listening to the Tiny Course Empire podcast, episode 119. I'm really, really excited about today's episode. It's an interview that I recorded several weeks ago, and I've kind of been itching to get it out to you ever since because it's so good, but I promised I would wait. My guest today is seriously one of my favorite people in the whole world. I've known her for probably a decade, and she's one of those people that just really, really brings out the best in everyone. She's kind, she's compassionate, and she just really loves on everybody. And she's a super, super smart businesswoman. She's written several books. She runs multiple companies. She travels all over the world to speak and to teach new entrepreneurs how to create a business that they love. So with that, I'll just remind you that you will find the show notes for this episode at tinycourseempire.com/119. And we will get on with today's interview because I know you are going to love it.
Welcome to the Tiny Course Empire podcast, a weekly show dedicated to helping you launch and grow your digital course business, even if you don't have a big team or a six-figure ads budget. We'll help you design smart systems, take consistent action, and achieve massive success on your own terms. Now, here's your host, Cindy Bedar.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to the Tiny Course Empire podcast. I am here with my guest, Rachel Marie Martin, and I could not be more excited to talk to somebody today because Rachel's got just a ton of insights that are going to help you grow your business, because that is what she does, among many, many, many other things. One of the things, I'm going to let you talk about yourself, but I got to just ask this question first.
All
Rachel.
Right. I'm ready.
You and Dan, you have 11 children between you.
We do.
11.
Right. It's more than two hands.
Yes. How do you manage to write books and do podcast interviews and run multiple businesses and travel and do, how do you do all the things?
I would say it's the season that we're in. The youngest one's 14. So, but you know, I started in this online world when the youngest was a baby yet. Actually, he wasn't even born. It's really, to me, I am so grateful for the space that we get to work in, because sometimes I think I'm not cut out for corporate America. And the alternative would be working somewhere else where I don't get this freedom. So we just look for the time, the little slots in between to do what we need to do. And that's how we manage it. And, you know, you wake up and you deal with the life that you have in front of you. So we just know we're busy right now. And we talk about the day when the last one graduates quite often.
So that's funny. I have a coaching client right now who does not have small children at home. She's a little older than you are, but she runs around with her hair on fire all the time. And I've just decided that's how she likes it.
I think that's
how she prefers to live her life. And I think some people are like that, you know? So when you say, when the kids are grown, when the last one is out of the house and gone to college in 4 or 5 years now, you're like, yeah, we're going to slow down, but I bet you won't.
I don't think so. Knowing Dan, there's no way, because
you'll launch
think
another
looks,
business.
Probably. I think he looks for a project at about 2/3 through a project, his brain is already on to the next project and the next one beyond that. So I'm sure there's a list of projects, whether it's business related or something in the house.
He wants to put a vaulted ceiling in the garage.
We do have a very cool garage, let me tell you.
I saw the YouTube video. I'll link to it in the show notes for anybody that wants to watch. Dan put a vaulted ceiling in his garage, which is totally not something I would ever think to do, but
it's gorgeous.
Hey,
it's gorgeous.
Cool.
It's cool. It is. I love him for it. I love him. At first, when he was cutting the hole, I was like, what are we doing? But it's done.
Are you sure that's safe? That was my
thought.
Can you do that? Allowed? I don't know.
Right. It's true.
So, so I got way off track because I'm a terrible interviewer, but tell me about yourself, Rachel. Tell me about what do you do and Because I've known you forever and mm-hmm. I know what you do, but what do you want other people to know about what you do? Like, what's your thing?
Oh, well, lots of people are fascinated that I get in the category of an OG mommy blogger. I get in that whole world. That's like the big pitch. People love that I've been online since 2005, but I always tell people I grew up techie. So I grew up in Minneapolis and I remember my dad buying a Texas Instrument home computer from some guy's house. This is way before Best Buy existed at this point. And I remember going in and we were in a kitchen and on the top of the cabinets where there should have been like a soffit, there were monitors, very large monitors, let me tell you. And I remember him picking one out and we get home and then he handed me a book and it was how to code. And I sat there and did all the coding. And if you make a mistake, all the screen like moves backwards. And I think I programmed a ball bouncing across the screen. So I like to think that I have these three parts to myself. I grew up where technology was the coolest thing. My dad, like, I remember when he got the computer game Myst, and it was like this first place person game. And I was fascinated with it. And in the world of Nintendo and all of that. And then I also liked to write and I liked to speak. So there's the second part. And then in my life, I remember hearing a speaker once when I was in a really hard place in life who encouraged me, who like gave me this hope. And that was, I always call it like the trifecta. I thought that's what I want to do. And so I was in the right place at the right time. And I started a blog in 2006, right after like the Yahoo Groups era. I'm going to call it the renaissance of the Yahoo Groups, because people would be like, we like your writing. Maybe you should start a blog. Started the blog, didn't know where it would go, but I loved it. And I found I could connect with people. And in the process of starting it, I figured out my voice. I figured out what I love to do. I figured out I loved the business side, the techie side, the growing a community side. So along with writing Finding Joy, my husband, Dan, who we've talked about, the Vaulted Ceiling guy, we started our own company, Audience Industries, and started teaching and training other bloggers, entrepreneurs, podcasters, how do you turn what's a hobby into a full-time career? And now it's 2024, and I've got my third book coming out. My Facebook page is a pretty powerful beast. I'm really proud of it, because one of my things I always talk to people about is there's this, you have to start to get to be able to share your story. And my first Facebook post ever for Finding Joy was, I guess I'm going to give this Facebook thing a try. And I'm like, how could that be so perfect? I've read like people's first tweets before, but I'm like, this is so perfect for me as an entrepreneur. And I look back now and I'm so grateful for that person, that me, all those years ago that decided to have the courage to try something that was an early adopter of Facebook pages at that point. And that has led to where I am now.
That is, I guess I'm going to give this Facebook thing a try. It's just,
I know.
It's just like iconic, isn't it?
It is.
Like, because let's talk about your Facebook. You have like a million, what?
I do. I have almost 1.1 million people that follow it. And I tell people a lot, it wasn't like an overnight. It's been since, I think, 2011. So it's been a slow, steady growth. Mm-hmm. I've never paid Facebook, which is part of what I talk about a lot. I've never paid them. Facebook actually pays me now to produce content, which is an awesome thing.
That's a sweet gig if you can get it.
It is. It's amazing. At first, I'm like, is this legit? And sure enough, it is. And I'm really, really grateful for that. But I also look back and I think I have put in a decade of work into building this and helping Facebook grow as well. So
right.
I enjoy that part.
It wasn't like you didn't put the work in.
Right.
So what's your community building is something that we're talking about a lot mm-hmm. inside my group, inside Six Figure Systems, and something that I talk about in terms of, you know, because I teach people how to market their coaching and their course business, right? And building a community is a large part of that marketing, making those connections with people. So how do you, like what's your secret there? How do you stay connected to a million plus people?
Well,
why do people love you so much, Rachel?
What is that? I try to be, if you were to meet me on the street or if you met me, you know, at a conference, I try to be who I am online is who you would meet in person. So I really try to, that authenticity part is, that's like the greatest comment I get is, you're exactly who I thought you'd be, or you look like who I thought you would. And I really want that because I think social media kind of distorts whatever, what that expectation is. But beyond that, I've always thought of each person that's clicked like, or that's answered something. It's, I value that person. I know that when somebody leaves a comment, they're taking time out of their 24 hours that day to write something and to share it. And not that I can respond nowadays to every comment, but I really do try. I try to go in there every day and write back something, sign my name, and a real comment, not like, thanks so much. You know, sometimes that's what it is, but other times I'll listen to what they're saying and I'll reply. And I learned that part a long time ago, probably a decade ago, when Twitter was really, I was really into tweeting and stuff like that. And there was a gluten-free company that produced, it was like a Lunchable, but it was gluten-free. And I loved it because I was traveling a lot. And I would tweet them all the time saying, I love your product, love your product. And I never heard anything. And it was probably after the eighth tweet where I hadn't heard anything. And I was at Target and I looked at it and I thought, I'm not buying it, because I was annoyed. I was actually frustrated. I felt like, well, I don't really matter to them in the scheme of it. And that changed things for me. I wanted the people that took the time out of their day for me to appreciate what they're giving me, and it'd be that type of relationship versus me, I was just wanting to either take or give. I wanted it to be this kind of relationship versus just, just me speaking at them all the time.
I love that. I was thinking as you were telling that story, I'm thinking one of the things that I really admire about you, and that I think a lot of people admire about you, is your willingness to just be, like you said, who you are. Like that's, I feel like that's what really makes the connection, especially with the mom audience, about, you know, this is hard. We have a hard job, and it doesn't look, you know, there's so many influencers out there who will show you all of their fancy cars and their beautifully organized pantries and their, you know, beautiful homeschool schedule, and everything is perfect and their kids are dressed and their hair is combed and everything is, you know, exactly as it's supposed to be. And that's a really high bar for people to live up to. And meanwhile, you're over here going, yeah, sometimes my life sucks.
It's true. And, because we all have it.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's life sucks sometimes, right? That woman on TikTok, her pantry does not always look like that. I guarantee it.
Yeah, you know what?
But you're the one that's out there saying it. And I think people love you for that.
Yeah, I remember in 2011, I had the first thing that ever went viral. And there was two things that went viral that year. One was dear mom who feels alone, because I felt alone. I felt social media was making me feel more lonely than ever, even though we had more friends. And the second one was, dear mom who feels like she's failing. And that one, I had to put a picture of just dishes in my sink. And all these women wrote in like, thank you so much for your bravery and sharing. And I thought, oh, we all have dishes in the sink at some time or another.
Right?
It's not that they stay there. I just wanted to share that moment where you feel, oh, I can't do it. And then I never wanted to leave people like in that kind of place. My whole goal with my writing, which is the community thing, was to meet them where they're at, which, you know, from a business standpoint, you're identifying the problem, which I would be dealing with, and then to offer encouragement, to let them feel heard, and then to offer a solution. And sometimes the solution might be, you know, gratitude, or sometimes it might be go for a walk, or sometimes it might be watch Netflix, but there was something.
Awesome. I love that. So that's how you build such a loyal community. You be real with them and you let them be real with you, and don't always feel like you have to present your most perfect facade. I guess.
Yeah. And I think it's also in listening to them, because it's not like everybody would always, you know, the written word can be read and interpreted differently. So if somebody was to come back and they were a critic or they were annoyed with it, I learned that a lot of people would get defensive or annoyed back or block. And I thought, you know what, this is again, a person taking time. So not if they're going to be mean or be mean to other people, they were out. But a lot of times I would just meet them where they were at and engage in a conversation. And that too, that one strategy of like, okay, I really want to hear, or, you know what, thank you for pointing that out. Let me hearing it a different way. I also think that took the facade off from it just being a page to a person, or where that person felt heard. And then I would learn stuff too, like, oh, maybe I should change that phrasing again. Or, and other people would observe that, so that now on the page, which is amazing to me, there's rarely, rarely any drama.
So you said something about the written word. Mm-hmm. So much of what we see on social media and in marketing today is video. It's all video or audio is kind of the second tier, right? We're podcasting. Mm-hmm. Audio is important. But written word or written content, I feel like, has kind of been pushed aside. Are you still embracing the written content? Do you still think there's room for written only content in the world? Because I don't think are you on TikTok?
No. Yes, absolutely. Because here's why I know is I will read the transcript of a podcast or a video on YouTube oftentimes more than I'll watch it. And that's like my insight, that we still do consume written word. And I really believe that the written word it's easier to have long form content that people can put down. You know, a video, very long, couple hour video. It's hard. Like, you don't stop a movie in mid movie but like a book or an article or something, that you can put it down. And the other thing I really love about it is it's so easy to still share it. I mean, you can share TikTok or you can share all that, but you can hand somebody a book or you can buy somebody an ebook. And Kindle and all those ebooks, as much as Audible is growing, I would say in sales, Kindle and the audiobook, they're on their own tier, they're neck and neck, but the actual book is 75-80% of all the sales, which is...
Oh, that's fascinating.
That tells me a lot. People want the book.
Fascinating. Yeah. Mm-hmm. People are still reading content. Mm-hmm. So what would you... So one thing that my audience struggles with a lot is putting themselves out there and being seen. Like, mm-hmm. they want to hide behind the laptop screen. They don't want to put their face online. They sure as hell don't want to be on TikTok. No way. They mostly don't want to start a YouTube channel. They really want to be behind the scenes. So that's obviously not you. So what advice do you have for people kind of to get out of their comfort zone and be more visible as the face of their business?
People are always looking for the face. They want to, you know, you go to a company and you click the about. Who are they? What do they do? Why do they believe that? And that's really important. There's a coffee shop here where they have their about story on the wall. It's giant. And every time I go in, I read it. It's fascinating to me. And it creates that connection where I think I'm going to go there because I like what they're about. The part about uncomfortable is, one of the things that I've embraced is pushing the limits of uncomfortable. Like, the more that you stretch that uncomfortable, what used to be uncomfortable, maybe putting the picture on the website or making the video, if you do it again and again, all of a sudden that becomes comfortable. But you don't get there unless you kind of sit in that space of uncomfortable and be okay with it. Like, you have to be okay with being a beginner, be okay with that video out there. The other thing I always say, though, is, you know, push yourself, but know where your audience is. Like, if TikTok isn't your thing, maybe it is written word, and maybe you figure out the best way to do that, or YouTube Shorts or all of that. There's a blogger that I like, I think it's Sean of the South, that he uses all written word and one picture, and that's it. That's it. I still read his about, but I love what he writes. So I always want to encourage creatives and entrepreneurs, what do you love? Like, you know, in the beginning of the podcast, I said I liked technology, I like to write and encourage, and I wanted to be the spark of hope. And so when I figured out that secret sauce, that's where I invest my time, because that's what makes work fun. Even though there's still work, there's still that element of like, yes, I love to do this. But if you want to be visible, you have to be willing to be uncomfortable to let yourself be visible.
That is so true. That's so true in my own experience. The things that, you know, the things that I was uncomfortable with a year ago or 3 years ago or 5 years ago are not the, those are my comfort zone now. You know,
if you had told me
5 years ago, you're going to get on a video call, you know, once a month with 500 six-figure systems members and teach them something live, I would have been like, oh no,
that
not
is
doing
so cool.
That live, can't do it live. Now I do it all the time. It's like, you know, whatever, log on 5 minutes before and I'm ready to go,
right. You
know?
You know, what's interesting about that is the no before. I have the simplest example for you about like that no part is, so Dan likes to, on January 1st, he likes to jump in the lake, the polar plunge thing to start off the new year. And so it's, now I don't live in Minnesota, so there's no like paramedics. So this year on January, he's like, I'm going to go jump in the lake. Who's going with? And most years I'm like, absolutely not. I'm not. This year, I chose a word for the year and it's confident. And it was like in my face. I thought, you have got to go on that jump. So I go with, and the entire drive there, I am like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. And I started asking myself, well, why don't you want to do this? And my answer was, because I don't want to be cold. I mean, it was so weirdly simple. And I was like, oh my gosh, you are stronger than cold. You are stronger than cold. So
really,
I end up
a little cold.
Right. A little cold. Right. So I end up going, getting there. And it was awful. It was cold. It was like, whatever. I didn't like it. And I go under and then I come up and I'm so cold that I fall back in, which makes it even more ironic. But then I was only cold for maybe 10 minutes. And after that, the power of accomplishment was huge. I was like, yeah, I did it. And it motivated me to want to do something else, which I've applied to business. Is there's so many times where I'm like, well, I don't really want to do it because what if I say the wrong thing? Or what if the lighting is wrong? Or I have all these little excuses, but they're the same excuse quality of, I don't want to be cold. And so that's what's helped me, you know, keep pushing in that moment.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. I love that. Yeah. what are you really resisting? I think when you, when you break it down to that, the other way that I've heard that expressed is, what's the worst that can happen?
That is Dan's thing.
When you really think about what the worst thing is that can happen, it's like, that's nothing.
Yeah. He asks, what will you, and my kids are, all of the kids will do it now. He'll say, well, what will you regret more? And I knew on that January, I would regret not doing it. I would have, I actually envisioned driving back after everybody else had jumped in and I didn't do it. Cause I had that experience before. I wanted to be the one that was cold. I wanted to be the one that experienced it.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. Love that. So when speaking of these kinds of things and getting out of your comfort zone, when I asked what topics, you know, you want to talk about on the podcast, one of the things that came up was audacious goals. Mm-hmm. And you have a 1,000-mile goal, something about 1,000 miles. What's that about?
Right. Okay. So in 2022, I decided, so I'm a runner and people have seen that I've run. My daughter started in the Space Force. I ran with her so she'd be ready for basic training. So in 2022, I decided that year I was going to run the distance from my driveway in Nashville to my parents' driveway in Minneapolis. And I decided that because it was just COVID still was happening. I needed to know in my brain, I could get there if the world went crazy, even worse, like I could make it to their house. So I broke it down. I started running and it was not 899 miles. And it was a lot. It was like 3 miles a day I had to commit to running. Well, I got into doing the goal and about February, I was a little bit probably super confident. Like, look how far I would tell Dan, look how far ahead I am. And he said, well, why don't you just run 1,000 miles? I was like, well, I can't do that. So he said, well, figure out what it is. And so I did. And it was like, I had to run 0.3 miles more a day to make it. Mm. And 0.3, I mean, it's 3 minutes if I'm running at a certain pace. So I was like, I can do this. And so I switched it. I kept the 899 mile goal, which I ended up finishing the last mile in my parent. I went up to Minnesota to visit them and I ran the last mile in their neighborhood into my mom's arms, which couldn't have been more perfect. And then I ended up finishing the 1,000 miles. I think it was December 28th of that year. And it wasn't like, it was micro goals every day. Like some days I would be like, you know what, I'm just going to run the cul-de-sac by my house because it was 1/10 of a mile. And I knew that if I did 10 days of that, it would be an extra mile, like a bonus mile in there. And I knew that that was an illustration for me of those, the little extra 10% that we can do. Like we have those audacious goals, but when you really make them, you're deciding, you know what, I'm going to do just 10 more minutes, or I'm just going to send one more email, or I'm just going to run one more mile or 1/10 of a mile. And then it adds up. And then you find yourself, like for me, they made me a finish line. I crossed it, it said 1,000 miles and Dan live streamed it. So I knew when I was running it, like I could hear in my brain, there's a life lesson in this. So oftentimes I would come home and write down, okay, what are you learning? What are you learning through this process? Because the same process, like the not wanting to jump in the lake, there were many days where I would be like, I just want to stop running. And then I would ask myself, well, why do you want to stop running? Well, I just want to stop. I'm tired. And it wasn't a real reason. It was just like, I was just kind of tired of it, which when you look at the entrepreneurial world, there's a lot of times where it's just pushing through like, oh, do I have to do this or and over, but pushing through it leads to the results.
Yeah. I was just going to say that that sounds like a business lesson right there. Cause sometimes you just don't want to do the thing. I don't want to send the email. I don't want to show up on their Facebook Live. I don't want to, I don't want to write another blog post. I just don't.
Right.
Sometimes that's okay, but.
And some it is, but you know, for me, I was back to that. What will I regret more? I have this, I mean, I have like I'm a big like notebook person. And at the beginning of the year, I made myself a chart, like a reward chart, like little kids.
Oh, tell me about that.
Yeah. And every day I just made this little box and little boxes in it. And every 2 miles I would fill in the box. And I didn't want to get to the end of the year and flip back through my journal and see that chart half finished. That was awful to me. So I built in accountability. I had that chart. Then I started sharing about it on Facebook. I would share a little map from like Nashville. And then let's say I ran 86 miles that month. I would map out what 86 miles looked at like on the map to Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. And what ended up happening was people got invested in this map. And so there was another layer of accountability. Like, I don't want to get where someone's like, hey, did you run this month? Where's the map? And that kept me motivated too. And then the visualization for me of running that last mile in my parents' neighborhood, that became huge. Like, okay, what is it going to be like? I would just imagine that on the days that I was exhausted. And I think that's the same for business, is you have those super big goals, but you got to have these little micro goals in it. And you have to build that accountability in it. And people that are willing to say, maybe you should go run today. So Dan was that a lot of times, like maybe you could run another 101 miles or you should just go run. Or the first time I ran a half marathon, he met with me and ran the last part with me. And when I was like, I want to quit, he was like, that's just because you've never done it before. Your body doesn't know what to do. So just keep running.
I love that. I love that. Such a good lesson for not just running, but business and life in general.
Life. Yeah. It was a life lesson that year. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So speaking of life lessons, you have a new book coming out. It's called Get Your Spark Back. Mm-hmm. And I read your other books, Mom Enough and the name of the other one is escaping.
The Brave Art of Motherhood.
Yep. The Brave Art of Motherhood. Yes.
Uh-huh.
And I read them and they're excellent books.
Thank you.
I have no children. Mm-hmm. So while they were excellent books and I did get some terrific insights from them, I feel like Get Your Spark Back is for me.
Which... I am incredibly excited about this book.
Yeah. So tell me about it.
Okay. I love this book so much. I love the title because it's like instantly resonates. When you talk about building an audience, I started listening to what they were saying and they would say, well, how do I get my spark back? That was the question they would ask me all the time. And I love that question because they never asked me, how do I get a spark? They always said, how do I get my spark back? And that word back means I want this back. I want to live with vibrancy. So the book is that it's that journey. It's a lot of my own personal stories or stories about my friends or just stories in life about people that hit that crossroads place. And they're like, well, now what? What do I do now? Or what next? Or even after COVID, people are like, well, I don't want to do that anymore. What do I do now? And it's that journey to your soul. People talk a lot about their heart, but it's like the soul, that part of you that has those passions and desires and wants to do those audacious goals. How do you reignite that? How do you find it? Because a lot of people are like, I don't even know where it is. And it goes through that process. And then it's, how do you reignite it? And how do you keep it burning? How do you keep that going? It's not like a 6-week program. It's like, how do you live with that posture of being audacious or having the big dreams and acting on them? And it goes through reframing your relationship with even how you look at money or friendship and all of that. But it ends with, it's that kind of call to finding yourself again and living, I like to say, all in, not holding back, not leaving something on the table, but deciding, you know what, I got this amount of time, hopefully in front of me, and I'm not going to be the one looking back going, I wish I had tried.
Not going to look back through your journal and see that yes. chart half filled in.
Yes. Yes. And you know what, maybe something would have happened and it would have been there, but it was, I didn't want it to be because I just got tired of it. I wanted to keep going.
Yeah. That's awesome. I can't wait to read it. It comes out August 27th, I think. It's available for pre-order at the time of this recording. So I'm going to get it pre-ordered.
Thank you.
What else do you want entrepreneurs to know? What do you want to leave them with?
Oh, well, I think entrepreneurs are some of the awesome and most bravest people out there because we've decided we're just going to create something. And, you know, it takes guts. And a lot of times I think we forget that. We forget the creativity, the willingness to try something new. And there was a time where I was flying back when I was speaking prior to COVID quite often. And I was on the plane and I sat and chatted with this man next to me who found out what I did. And we chatted the whole flight. And at the end of the flight, I said, you know what? I didn't even ask you what you did. And he said, well, I'm just a civil engineer. And I thought, huh, that was really powerful to me. He said, just like, he looked at what we did with this like curiosity and in like, he was like enthralled with the idea that we could create a business. And so on those rough days or those days where you're like, what am I doing? I just go back to that goal, daily little steps. You know, when I was running, there was some days where it was a terrible run and I thought, I am not cut out for this, but you have to have the terrible runs to have the really good ones. And the same goes with business. So just keep at it and know that you are doing something that it's amazing in this world. And that's what I cling to. Like, I love that we get this opportunity to work from home and to create a business that we love.
Excellent. I love it too. Just a civil engineer, huh?
Uh-huh. Isn't that interesting?
That seems like a pretty big deal to me, but.
I know. I was like, I said, that's amazing. He goes, well, I'm not doing what you're doing. Like, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Well, Rachel, this has been so insightful and so much fun chatting with you. And I said at the beginning, I'm not an interviewer and I'm not, and I'm so appreciative that you you were willing to come on the show and talk to me. I know that you have so many opportunities open to you. So I appreciate you spending your time with me today. And for everybody listening, go get Rachel's book. I'm going to put the link in the show notes to get your spark back, and also to Rachel's site, findingjoy.net, where you can make a connection with her, because it is well worth getting to know her. Thanks, Rachel.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear on the Tiny Course Empire podcast, you're going to love all of the courses and workshops and support you'll find inside Six Figure Systems. That's my monthly program where we dig into online marketing for regular people like you and me. We don't do big launches, we don't have the big headaches, and we don't have the big expenses that come with them. Instead, we focus on creating repeatable, sustainable systems that continue to grow over time and that don't suck up all of our energy or require a 10-person team to manage. You can come see what we're all about at sixfiguresystems.com, and I'll see you on the inside.